So here we go. I wanted to start with a quote from an earlier reading, actually, just because it seems to me to be so relevant to the whole focus right now and the whole way we're trying to approach this. It's from page 90, and Rinpoche describes it as, he describes a silent battle, and that's kind of how I think what we're doing, I think of what we're doing right now. He says, there's a silent battle going on for the being of time, and we are waging that battle. And he says, at stake in this silent battle for the being of time is whether we are truly alive. And that's it. That's what we're looking for. Are we alive or not? Michael, in one of his comments, or in his comment this week, referred to Gurdjieff saying that the question was, are we conscious or not? And that's a similar question. I think to say that we're truly conscious is maybe quite similar to saying that we're truly alive. I like to focus on aliveness because, you know, who really knows what consciousness feels like? But we do have the experience of being alive, you know, feeling more alive at some times than others. And that's really what we're aiming for, which means that it's a very experiential focus. So when we do the reading, you know, it's always a lovely thing, in my view, to read carefully and really try to understand the subtlety of what Rinpoche is saying, because unless we do that, we are going to fall into our accustomed ways of thinking. So reading itself is a kind of an exercise, and we've certainly talked about that before. But right now, you could say we're doing the reading to get clues about how we can really be more alive in our experience. And there's a very interesting little phrase at the beginning of the reading for this week that gives a clue as to how we could approach that aliveness. Rinpoche talks about the charged field. This is on page 96, in the first paragraph of the reading. He talks about the charged field within which the aliveness of present experience can unfold. So it's a little, you know, it's not necessarily obvious what that means, a charged field, but I think that sense of charge, it's a little bit like if you're anticipating something that you've really been looking forward to for a long time, and your anticipation charges the atmosphere. That's a phrase we use in English, right? So it's, or I suppose in a way it comes from storms, where there's a kind of, we talk about there being an electricity in the air. That's another way of talking about it. I think that's really a clue as to how we can approach that, how we can practice contacting aliveness. And because it is such an experiential focus, I thought it would be a good idea if we just took a couple of minutes right now and took a look. And you know, I know people in their comments, I think the comments this week were very nice. I would wish for more comments, but the comments were nice because people were describing what are the times when experience is more alive, when time is more dynamic, when the future, the possibility of the future, the future infinite presents itself. So that was all in the comments, in the posts for this week. But I thought it would be a good idea if we took a couple of minutes right now and just see, you know, here we are. What could you do right now? What is it right now that you would try to undertake, to activate, in order to touch that quality of aliveness? So let's do that for a couple of minutes, and then we can talk about it. Okay? Let's go. Okay, so let's hear something from people. I don't mean for this to be a contest, you know, like who can be the most alive the most quickly. but I'm interested in what you found, taking that on as a kind of a challenge. So I'll leave it open for people to say something. Well, can you say a little more?
Feelings in the body, letting go of tensions and then feelings that result from that. The mind seems to be chugging away.
Okay.
Saying things, noting things.
Mm-hmm. Did one part of that seem more alive than another part?
The body seems more alive than the mind.
Yeah. Yeah, the body has its own dynamic, and I mean, it doesn't care all that much about what's going to happen later or what happened before. So it does seem like one way into aliveness, and I guess this kind of stands to reason, is the aliveness of the body, the immediacy of the experience of the body. Okay, anybody else? Yeah. Did I hear somebody agreeing with that?
Yeah, I think
it's Tracy. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, when we do a practice like what we just did, the question, you know, you're kind of focused, or at least I was, from time to time, the thought would come, well, okay, when this practice is over, here's what I'll say, or here's how we'll go on. And it's a little tricky because you could say, well, you know, that anticipation of the future is itself alive, is itself an openness, but we don't stay with the anticipation or the thought or the memory or whatever it is it, as an act. We go more into the content of it.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the tricky part.
Anticipation as we do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not sure. Go ahead.
I know aliveness too.
Mm-hmm.
I took your question to be, what is it we need right now to feel more alive?
Okay.
So taking that way, I attended to breath and had breath feed its intensity and lightness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That was sort of the intent of the practice.
And was that effective for you?
Yes, very enlightening.
Okay, good. So, yeah, that's a good point that, you know, there's a couple of ways to do things in TSK. I mean, I'm sure there's many, but whenever I say there are two ways, then this little voice comes up and says, well, really, there's many. So, but let me just say there's a couple of ways. One is to really pick out a practice, you know, pick out a particular exercise that you're going to do. And by and large, and we've talked about this before, in this program, we haven't been doing that so much. But for people who already have ways of practicing that they like to work with, that can be really effective. And if we were in a retreat setting, something like that, then that could be very effective also. But the other way is just within experience to look for what it is that is most alive. And actually, that's a formulation that I'm going to suggest for next week. I can't remember if it's from the reading, but you know, just whatever is going on in your experience, if you look for what is most alive in the experience, it might even be a memory. It won't be the content of the memory, but it might be the act of remembering or something like that. But if you look for whatever is most alive, that's the other basic way to do it. And so those two are not hard and fast. The distinction between them is not hard and fast. It may be that you use an exercise to kind of stimulate that quality of aliveness, and then you see how it develops and you let go of the exercise. That's just one possibility. There's many, many, many ways to do this. But in every case, we're looking for the same kind of quality. Anybody else want to say anything about what we were just doing or what we've just been talking about?
Yeah, I do. I was noticing, sitting here thinking about it, but reflecting on having been outside this morning. And I'm visiting my brother in Prescott, Arizona, so it's an environment that is not all that familiar to me. But I was listening, and just the act of listening to things around me, you know, the little trickles of streams and a variety of birds that I don't hear all that often, and other kinds of sounds. And I was, when I was not thinking about the fact that I'm listening, I was just, you know, pure listening, then I felt more alive. But as soon as the thoughts came in of me, Tracy, standing here listening, and then I lost it. I didn't feel that quality of aliveness anymore. And especially, and it took another step when,
so
this is what I'm
going to
tell people.
Yeah, right. Right. No, that's a good point. And it's we build up these layers, you could say, you know, that separate us from the aliveness of our experience. So we, in a sense, we have to tunnel down and find the real aliveness. And, you know, the fact that you mentioned birds is interesting because I think Karin, it was last week, talked about birds. I think somebody else may have too. And I've actually noticed that too. I was in Germany a few years ago leading a TSK retreat, and the room that we did our practice in had more birds around it than I can remember hearing anywhere else. And there was something so powerful about that. I don't know if it's something special about birds or if somehow, I mean, the thing about birds is that they somehow give voice to nature. You know, it's just kind of their being to sing. Anyway. Birds are a good practice. I think birds are a good practice. Okay. So we're looking at this aliveness. We might think for a moment about how this connects back to space. I guess in theory, in this program, we have started right off with time. Before that, we were looking in the earlier programs. Most of you have been along for the earlier ones as well, we were looking at space and the openness of space. And I don't know that I have so much to say about that right now. I just wanted to suggest that would be an interesting question to explore. What is the relationship between the aliveness of time and the openness of space? And I guess the one thing I do want to suggest there is that although they're very different in some ways, they both stand in contrast to our ordinary way of being, which is not alive and is not open. So that would be a way to think about that. It may just be something you'd like to consider as we move along. So, as I said already, I think that what people were posting on the website is good because it's very helpful to see how people have been exploring this question of aliveness. And there's the question that, or the observation that several people made, and that we've talked about before, which is, I wonder what that is. Does everybody hear that sound?
Yeah, yeah, I
Open up, Jack.
Excuse me. Well, there's some kind of almost static. Anyway, it's gone right now. So I was just talking about the fact that people sometimes we're talking in their posts about the temporariness of aliveness. You know, for a moment it's there and then it's not. And it's, I think that's fine, and I think people, I think Karen commented that it doesn't have to be discouraging when you feel you've lost it, because then it tends to come up more spontaneously in other times during your day. And that's really what we're kind of moving towards, you could say, is a spontaneous appreciation for, well, you could say for time and space and knowledge, but you could also say for our own aliveness or our own being or our own experience. It doesn't matter so much what the words are, except the different ways we have of talking about it all have the tendency to close things down a little bit. Words are not in themselves alive. They're just pointers to what's alive. So you can be sensitive to that. But whatever the words are that you're using, just to notice when that comes up. And I think that's really, if you're doing that, and if it comes up spontaneously, then you can say there is something of value in this whole approach we're taking. Okay, so we're getting a little static again, but I'm just going to charge ahead. We've been talking about focusing on the future. So we have this quote that's in our reading for this week that we've been working with, and it's on page 99. When he talks about, well, let's read it. It's at the bottom of page 99. And he talks about the immediacy of the dynamic dimension of time. And he says, to rediscover the immediate feel of this connection, we can go directly to the point of arising, the point in each experience where the future could be said to come into being. And at this point, I want to broaden that out a little bit, because we worked with the future, that sense of the future moment arriving, and I think people have had some good experience with that. But it's also true that that Rinpoche says in this chapter that the future is not. Not necessarily the linear future. In other words, you know, we think about ourselves in the present and then the next moment is going to be the future. But what he's actually talking about in this chapter is broader than that. He's really saying that there's this realm of possibility that aliveness means that things are not fixed and pre-recorded and everything can open up. And you can say that the future is that quality of not being pre-recorded. You can take a look at the bottom of page 98, that whole section, or the whole section that starts on that. He says, he calls time the future dimension. That's the heading. So I think what's being suggested here is ordinarily time for us is a past-centered dimension. We talked about that before, that everything has already happened in, right? He's saying if you put the future at the center, and I guess I'll just read the quote at the bottom of page 98, where he talks about our ordinary sense of time as something measured out is past-centered. And then he says, if we put the future at the center of our understanding of time, temporal dimensionality means something quite different. Through time, the universe comes alive. And then the discussion which goes on there and says a little more about that. And then in the second paragraph on page 99, he says, the future is the natural focal point, the source for imagination and aliveness, immediacy and creativity. And by the way, it might be useful for you. You know, we've talked about aliveness a lot today, but he gives several possible ways of exploring this alternative, not just aliveness, but imagination, immediacy, creativity. So you might see if those what those words evoke. But anyway, to go on, he says, having talked about the future as the natural focal point, he says, yet the same dimensionless dimensionality is available not only in the future as a separate branch of time, but now and in the past as well. The future transmits time's dynamic into being, and experience in all its aspects embodies this future arising of time. So what he's suggesting here is that it's very helpful to get a sense of the future and to put that at the center of our practice. But as we begin to open to this quality of aliveness, we discover it in all of our experience. And you might ask, well, what about the past? You know, it seems like the past, by definition, is not alive. You know, it's already gone. It already happened. But even there, there are times when we engage the past in a way that is very alive. If we have a sudden memory, I mean, I think one place this comes up that people are familiar with is with smells, right? If you smell something and it reminds you of the past, something of a specific instance in the past, that past moment tends to show up with a very strong quality of aliveness. A feeling of being there. Or perhaps you think about somebody you haven't thought about for a long time, and in that first moment of recalling that person, there's a kind of an aliveness. It's like the whole aliveness of that person, for just a moment anyway, is there. So there are all these possibilities and ways of approaching this. You know, we don't have to stay focused on the future. That's what I'm saying. If we think about that in a literal way, and my suggestion is that during the coming week, you really try to broaden it out in that way. And I think people have already been doing that in a very natural progression. I mean, it's pretty. You know, when you start to look for aliveness, it's not as though you say to yourself, oh, I don't get to look at the present because I'm supposed to be interested in the future. We already have that sense that the aliveness is available everywhere. But that's what I would suggest for the week, and I'll put this in the little essay I post, that experience in all its aspects, as he says here, embodies the future arising of time. So we can look in any moment, in any dimension or aspect of time, we can see if it's possible to contact that aliveness or immediacy or creativity. He uses the word imagination, as we said, and that's interesting to think about. In what sense does imagination embody this open future dimension? So, my question, that's more my suggestion. The other thing I wanted to point out is just that Rinpoche makes a very clear distinction between these two different ways of experiencing time. I'm looking at the last full paragraph on page 100. First of all, he suggests something that's interesting that we really won't explore today, but he says, when you're more aware of time in this future dimension, there's a sense of new knowledge that's available. But then he says, as we experience this openness, the openness of t- to this aliveness of time. The contrast between a future-centered way of being and one guided by past recordings may stand out strongly. And then he gives a very interesting and helpful suggestion, I think. He says, if so, we can set the two opposite each other and trace their connection. How do we move from one to the other? If we find ourselves trapped in the pre-recorded, how can we renew our contact with time's dynamic? And that's basically what we did at the beginning of this call in that short exercise, because the fact is that even if you've got a renewed interest or something has been activated in you where you're wanting to explore this dimension of time, a lot of the time during the day, a lot of what goes on in your life, you won't be doing that. No, you will have settled back into a more standard, a more past-centered way of understanding time. But what Rinpoche is suggesting here is that if you notice that going on, one possibility would be to say, well, wait a minute, that's not what I want. I'd like to have more of this aliveness, and you can see how to do that. But the other possibility would be to say, what's going on here? What is the nature of this recorded quality, this deadening? And you know, how did I find myself in this situation? And how could I make the move back? So it's not so much that we have to discard our ordinary experience. We just need to look at it in light of the possibility that experience could be different. And that very possibility is probably exactly what we're looking for. And Rinpoche makes a suggestion, continuing right at that point, that we may find that there's a concentration that lets us do that readily. Because, you know, my experience, and I think in general people's experience, is that there's a kind of a vicious circle that's involved when you're stuck in pre-recorded time. Let's use that language. It's kind of TSK jargon, but let's use it for now. So when you're stuck in pre-recorded time, the vicious circle is that the very fact that you feel stuck means that you don't seem to have the energy to be able to move out of it. When you sort of say to yourself, oh, here I am feeling stuck, or here I am feeling unhappy or bored or you know, just dissatisfied in some fundamental way. And there's this little thought that floats through that says, well, it wouldn't have to be this way. I could do it differently. I know I've had different experiences. I know we're doing these TSK practices or this approach, which is supposed to change all of that. And then... the response to that thought is something like, yes, but I can't, or I don't want to, or it's just too much work, or I don't know how to energize myself in that way. That's the vicious circle, and it's exactly in that response, in that moment of response, that we find ourselves not knowing what to do or feeling like we don't have any choice but to stay stuck. So that's the more subtle level. When you find yourself in that position, when that's your response, what can you do? And that's exactly the question that Rinpoche asks here. If we find ourselves trapped in the pre-recorded, how can we renew our contact with time's dynamic? He suggests the possibility that concentration might be a bridge. But I'm not sure if that's so helpful, because then you say, well, sure, it'd be nice if I could concentrate, but when I try to, I can't. So you're stuck. So he then makes this other move, which I think is really important, and I want to make this point, and then we'll stop for today. The first full paragraph on page 101, and he says, questions like this, how can I get out of this stuckness? What's going on when I'm stuck? These questions are themselves bridges to the future aliveness of time. And that still may seem a little abstract, but I think if you explore it, you'll find that there's a real possibility for openness there. In one of the earlier programs, when we were talking about space, I think it was, I talked about this very illuminating sentence or two in the first TSK book, when Rinpoche is talking about the three levels of space. And he says the first level of space is not just our ordinary space. He says it's our ordinary space seen in the light of other possibilities. And that potential, that opportunity for other possibilities is in fact the gateway, you could say, to this whole vision. So to be at the first level of space or at the first level of time is already to have engaged the vision, because our ordinary way of being in space and time doesn't even allow for any other possibilities. We never even think to ask the question, or it never occurs to us that things could be different. So the first level, the moment when the vision begins to open up, is when you ask these questions. And the question in this case, the one that Rinpoche is suggesting, is what's going on when I find myself stuck like this, and how could I change it? How could it be different? So we don't need to have an answer. The question itself is already enough of a practice. So I think that gives us a lot to work with for the week. We also will be going into a reading now, which is longer than our readings have been. So do what you can with it. Pick something out. It's not a long reading. It's just that we've been pretty kind. And that's not the right word. We've been exploring the possibility that the reading itself can be a practice. And we've been doing that by taking the reading quite slowly, really, with a lot of appreciation, I hope. But my sense is that people have been reading with a lot of appreciation. So now we have to speed up a little bit, but hopefully the quality of appreciation will remain, will continue. Okay, that's it for this week. Sorry for the technical difficulties, and especially those of you who aren't on the call because you kept getting dropped but are listening to this. I hope you find something of value in it, and that you join us again next week. Okay.